Hello and welcome to Virtues of Peace. My name is Hope Elizabeth May. I am joined by Michael Buzzy, Randy Olson, and special guest Vanda Proshkova, or Proshkova. Sorry, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Vanda, but
it's beautiful.
Thank you so much for being here, Vanda. Vanda is dialing in from the Czech Republic, I think someplace near Prague. And we are so happy to have her here today, and God willing, she will be with us also next week, because her work spans generations. She not only does work historically, which we're going to talk about today, but she also uses that historical inspiration to connect with multiple projects that she's working on today, and namely nuclear disarmament. And we have done a few shows on the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, and January 22nd of this year, that treaty, that historic treaty, I should say, will enter into force. And so next week, we will be focused on Vanda's nuclear nonproliferation work. But today, we're talking about one of our favorite personalities from the Peace Through Law movement, and one of our beacons, actually. And that is Bertha von Suttner. We mentioned her last week when we had a discussion with Stephen von Hoogstraten, the former director of the Carnegie Foundation, who historically unveiled the first ever actual woman to be placed in the Peace Palace statue, that is. And that was Bertha von Suttner, and that was in 2013. We talked about her. We talked about the 1899 Hague Peace Conference, which she just was so important in and sort of inspiring and then publicizing. She was a huge fan of arbitration. And Vanda is working hard to restore the memory of Bertha to the Czech Republic. And Bertha was born in 1843 in Prague. And so she has a special connection to the Czech Republic. So that's what we will be talking about today. And so, Vanda, again, thank you for being here. We spoke a little while, a couple of days ago, and I just want to reiterate that I'm so impressed with the work that you're doing, and happy to be connected with you, and excited to see what you will be doing with your work on Bertha von Suttner, for one, but also your other work on international peace and security. And so, can you just tell us a little bit about your background and what you do now as a member of global civil society.
Right. Hello, everyone. And thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure. I've listened to a number of your podcast episodes and I'm like a fan now. So it's an extreme honor for me to be here. So as part of the global civil society, I guess my main function is a vice chair of Prague Vision, the Institute for Sustainable Security. And this name, you know, Institute for Sustainable Security, this name was specifically chosen so that we'd have a certain level of freedom in what we do, so that we cover topics such as, of course, nuclear disarmament. That's our main thing, I'd say, but also sustainable development and, of course, peace, and especially peace with the connection to Bertha von Suttner. And so apart from the international conference on Bertha we did in 2019, mm-hmm. We have also organized different other conferences on these topics, specifically nuclear disarmament. We also participate in many roundtables and panels and pavilions, both here and abroad. We also do movie screenings, which is my new favorite thing. We also, especially last year, upon request, I did a couple of informal sessions for university students from around the globe, really. And we talked with them and to them about disarmament and peace and sustainable development. And then together we'd have a discussion on how these issues interconnect and what the possible solutions are and how we can do more to make these issues stand out and so on. So that's been really inspiring. And we don't really have any employees, or all of our endeavors are basically just us devoting our free time to these projects. So what I really love about being part of this, I want to say movement almost, is that we do everything with really our passion and our hearts, and just for the sake of us really enjoying it. So most of the time it's been fun. Mm-hmm. And I love what I do.
Yeah, that's great. And so Can you talk a little bit about Prague Vision as I understand it? And by the way, you can access the website of Prague Vision at our show resources page, virtuesofpeace.com, as well as other resources such as President Obama's 2009 Prague speech, which, as I understand it, inspired Prague Vision. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So President Obama's 2009 Prague speech, that was just a moment. Mm-hmm. It was a landmark occasion for the Czech Republic. You know, it was at the Prague Castle next to the statue of Masaryk, which was the first Czechoslovakian president. He's a big figure. He's our Washington. Mm-hmm. And his speech was just phenomenal. He was remembering, you know, Czech history, like the Prague Spring, the Velvet Revolution, a peaceful protest that changed the course of history for us. He spoke about the power of a moral leadership, which, how relevant that is today. He's also talked about climate change and fossil fuels, you know, back in 2009, before it was cool. And he also mentioned, here it comes, nuclear weapons. So he was saying how while Cold War is over, yeah, there's still thousands of nuclear warheads here. And I quote him, he said that the threat of nuclear war has gone down, but the risk of a nuclear attack has gone up, which is, that's an amazing quote. And also he went on by saying that he clearly and with conviction, America's commitment to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons. And then just together with the yes, we can. It was just a very big moment. So we're trying to continue to build into movements this idea. We cooperate with other international organizations in the field of nuclear disarmament, but we also translate key documents into Czech and then help to bring the issue closer to people in the Czech Republic who perhaps don't speak the English language. But we're also broadening our work. So I'd even say that we're even steering away from nukes lately, and we devote our time to, you know, the inspiring story of Bertha von Suttner and bringing her back to the Czech Republic and trying to revive her legacy, because these are as important issues as nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and so Prague Vision was really inspired by this moment that you're talking about.
It really was. Yes.
That's amazing.
Without that speech, we wouldn't be here.
That is really amazing. I want to open it up to any other of the co-hosts on the show to see if they have any questions or comments before we move on. Go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, I have a quick one. You know, it's been my experience that everyone's personal story with how they came to learn about Bertha von Suttner for the first time has some kind of deep significance. I've yet to meet anyone who that wasn't true for. So I'm curious if there was anything particularly, you know, meaningful in your quest, so to speak, when you first found Bertha. Like, what was that moment like for you? And how did that sort of change the way you looked at history and the world?
I guess my story is rather random. I was doing my undergrad in international relations, and I was very much into counterterrorism and global security and all of that. And I did a study abroad in Australia, and I took classes on U.S. foreign policies and just like random things. And again, a completely random professor in a random class on security, just in a hallway, just mentioned this woman, this magical woman who was born in Prague and wrote this random book. And he assumed that I knew who he was talking about. And I was just blanking completely, like did not heard of that name before. So ashamed, after the class, went back to my dorm and just Googled Bertha and just got amazed. And then just started to pick up on those stories about her. And then a few months after that, I got introduced to Prague Vision, where they already knew about Bertha and was also completely amazed by her story and what she represents. And then we were just, it was all coming together really quickly. And we realized that not many Czechs know about her. And together we were brainstorming on what to do to bring Bertha back to the Czech Republic. And so we launched this roller coaster of events and preparations for the conference that we wanted to do, and then also the book and so on. And I really haven't let it go since. But it was, the first introduction was rather random, sadly.
Well, that doesn't sound all that random. It created this whirlwind. You said it was only a few months later that you ended up getting involved with Prague Vision. And so it sounds like it kind of kickstarted something like an avalanche. That's pretty fascinating to me. I love that. Thank you.
I guess it was meant to be.
And Michael, do you go ahead?
Yeah. Was there any particular aspect of Bertha that really captivated you, or that made you feel drawn towards her to, I guess, continue to pursue and learn more about her?
So many things. This is a very, very hard question. But I think rather than her like separate specific ideas, just the notion, you know, because she was promoting ideas that were in her time, could be irrelevant. People could laugh at her. People wouldn't take her seriously. But that didn't scare her. She continued pushing for her work and promoting her ideas. So just this idea of when you believe in something, you should really go for it and try to make it happen. Just that thing about her personality. Together, we know, because we can say that Bertha was just a writer or a feminist, right? We can't devote her to one thing only. She was so many things in one person, in one woman. And that's together so inspirational to me.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on a couple of things that you said, Vonda. So first, going back to the quote unquote random nature of how you sort of randomly heard about Bertha from some random professor in a hallway. I mean, I just want to, we've talked about this moment that I'm about to again talk about on this show, but I feel compelled to talk about it again. And this thing called the extraordinary in the ordinary. And, you know, the way that Bertha herself found out about the organized peace through law movement was quite random. She had just finished her book, The Machine Age, Das Maschinen Zeitalter, or Das Maschinen Altalter. There's two different titles for it. And she was in Paris with the Czech, not Czech people, like the royalty Czech, and just hanging out. And someone mentioned this movement to build a new court to end war. And she talks about this in her memoirs, and she says, this news, quote, shocked and electrified me. It was just like this bolt of lightning. And like, what, this exists? And, you know, this is quote unquote random. It's not it's not in a sort of formal classroom. It's, you know, conversation over tea. And this moment changes her life forever. So I just want to point out that these seemingly quote random moments are proven to be very impactful. And the other thing I want to comment on, you know, going back to Michael's question about whether there's, you know, one thing in particular, and you're talking about Bertha's sort of commitment, come what may, to her vision. And on this show, we really try to draw attention. It's called The Virtues of Peace. And so to the virtues of these characters, so the virtues of these individual persons that are worthy of having an encounter with. And I would say that in Bertha's case, it's fortitude, it's persistence through obstacles. And that is an absolutely crucial virtue. It's one of the cardinal virtues. And I just wanted to make that connection. And I leave it open for anybody to follow up or not. Going once, twice. Okay. And so also, Vonda, you were studying international relations. And can you just explain what drew you to that topic?
Well, so I come, I'm Czech, but we've got some family in the US, and my mom teaches English, and I was just, the way I was raised was that we'd always have some international friends going over. So I grew up in a very multicultural environment, I'd say. So I was always just like having different cultures and how they differ, what's similar. Teenager excite me was that we'd hear a song in the US over the summer, and then I'd come back to school to the Czech Republic in the fall, and like the song would just get here, I was the cool kid. Well, anyways, and I loved I grew up in when Obama was the president, and that diplomacy, it inspired me. So when I went into IR, I wanted to be a diplomat and wanted to contribute by having dialogues and conversations and being able to change things for the better, which maybe was a bit naive, but different cultures and conversations and what that can do.
Was there any consciousness at that time of the peace movement, or is that just like not even on your radar?
No, absolutely not. And I think that's actually something that we discuss a lot when we do different group talks with the university students, that we're so undereducated on these issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, I studied IR. Now I'm doing my master's in international law, and I've heard about nuclear weapons in my studies maybe 3 times, and that'd be an over-exaggeration. And that's the same thing for other students doing not just IR, but global governance, politics, anything. We don't hear about these issues enough. And that's something that I'm trying to change, because that's just that's so fundamentally wrong. And also peace education, that's just missing in our schools. And that's making me very sad.
Yeah, we have talked about on this show, we launched this show on May 18th of 2020, okay? And May 18th used to be a national holiday in the United States. I learned about this from Bertha, actually, reading one of her speeches from 1912. She's giving a speech in the United States, and she praises the United States for being so progressive in the peace cause. And for example, she says, you celebrate Peace Day. And I'm reading that and I think, what is she talking about? And so I just followed the thread, and I looked it up and I saw, indeed, we used to celebrate May 18th as Peace Day. And just as we have these days today, and there's a lot of UN international days, there's also International Criminal Justice Day, and these days exist to, teach people about, for example, the International Criminal Court or the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, or, Gandhi's birthday. I mean, all of these different days, and these days have educational purposes. And so at a moment, there was a moment, and Bertha's marking it for us, the United States, and it was the United States government. I have the actual, pamphlets that the United States government published with peace education curricula. It's absolutely amazing. What happened was World War I. So I think maybe, I don't know. I don't know if anybody wants to add in to this, because we talk a lot about education on this show. And it's one of the reasons why we do the show. Go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to point out, it's a small fact, but, in the Royal Oak School District, the third graders were given on December 10th of 2020 a whole day worth of information about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And so, I mean, I think that this kind of thing is coming back in a more direct and tangible way. For the foreseeable future, I think it's like people are starting to wake up to how important these, the things that happened in the past are. Like, we're we're not obviously going to just magically develop a comprehensive appreciation of history and, you know, the due respect that it deserves, but we're trying. And I think that that's non-trivial.
Yeah, and also Hope, you're right that it's great to use these International Day to, mm-hmm. to commemorate these important things. And we should work more in trying to make them be remembered and recognized. So for example, May the 24th, I believe, mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. the International Women's Day for Peace and Disarmament. Mm-hmm. How many people know about that? So we did, within the nuclear disarmament world, we did a women's appeal signed by over 250 women leaders from around the globe. Mahatma Gandhi's granddaughter signed it, mm-hmm. by the way, and many other amazing women. And that appeal highlighted the role of women in peacemaking, but also supported the UN Secretary General's agenda for disarmament and the global call for ceasefire and so that. So it's there, but we mm-hmm. should... I acknowledge that we should be using these days more to highlight the important mm-hmm. issues.
Yeah, and I just want to say, you know, it's great that, you know, the Royal Oak School District, you have a day dedicated to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but again, to remember Bertha's wisdom about the importance of education being lifelong and continuous. And then the fragility of memory. And so we may hear it in the third grade, but if it's not reinforced over and over and over again, we're going to forget it. And there's so much adult education that's needed as well. I mean, myself, I learned about Bertha, you know, definitely as a midlife, mid-career professional. It was not through any formal education, and I was just continuing my own intellectual development. And this is something that Bertha stresses we need to all be doing. And so I just want to highlight that as well. Anybody else on this point about education? Michael.
Yeah, Vonda, I just wanted to say I really appreciate you bringing up that point of education. I guess as a second year university student, that really struck a chord with me personally, just since throughout all of my studies thus far. Granted, I'm only about halfway through, but this peace history was never something I had encountered in my K through 12 education and then since in university. And if it wouldn't have been for coming into contact with Hope, Taylor, or Randy, this would not have been something I would have known about. And I definitely, and I think what Hope said about Bertha's multiple passes of truly, that it requires multiple interactions with something to truly come to understand it, really applied greatly to me, since I'm a political science major. So I took two college level political courses in high school. I have approached life completely thus far from a very political oriented mindset. And for me, coming in contact with the peace history, my political mind kind of rejected it sort of outright in the beginning as just, you know, high-minded ideals, and that, you know, the brute force and machinations of these nations is how everything has sort of been kept in balance thus far. But I think through my multiple passes at this, it has truly come to change and shift my view of how, you know, the world works and what can be accomplished through education of this truly incredible history and movement and the individuals who encompass it. And I think for all people, this education component is certainly paramount and is something that should continue lifelong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's a never-ending, quest.
Mm. Hear, hear. Yeah, and I believe I talked about this last week in our dialogue with Stephen von Hoogstraten, again, to connect it to something that one finds in, I believe it's in her memoirs. I made this point last week about, you know, the importance of this quote unquote education, or this mindset, as Michael is referring it to it as, on the imagination. And, you know, since we've talked about Obama today, let's recall that he repeatedly in his speeches would use the phrase moral imagination, which I absolutely love. And if you're not exposed to this framework, this way of thinking, your imagination, what you can imagine to be possible, is very stilted. And again, Bertha talks of this encounter with a young man during the 1899 Hague Peace Conference who has read her book, which we're about to talk about, and what you've done, Vonda, with the translation. This is Die Waffen Nieder, which is the book that made Bertha really, really famous. She publishes it in 1889. So again, 10 years before the 1899 Hague Peace Conference. So she was like very prescient with this book. And so that's just really important to keep that in mind. This is a 10-year time span between this book and the conference that we talked about last year. But in any case, when she's at this conference in 1899, she encounters a young man who is just absolutely praising her for her book and saying, like, before reading it, he imagined himself to be some sort of like military officer. But now that there's like this new movement for a new court, and wow, it's happening right now here at the conference. His father was, you know, a delegate, and like he was watching it, you know, come to life. And now I see myself as an international judge. And I just, again, it's this moral imagination. And so she imagines it. She's not the only one. And very powerful, obviously, because we're inheriting it today. So let's talk about Die Waffen Nieder. And one of the things that you've done is usher in a new translation in the Czech language of this really important book of Bertha, Die Waffen Nieder. And you published a new translation in modern Czech. And can you just talk about the process of this project, how you sort of came to the idea, and what inspired you to do it, why this book, etc.?
Absolutely. Right now we're at that stage where Prague is up and running. We know there is Bertha, and we're just debating what to do with her. We know we want to do this international conference about her ideas, about her legacy, and how relevant they are in, 130 years later. And we wanted to be able to give the participants a version of her favorite book. That's just something that was an idea that really caught on. And so I went on research. I searched for the book on Amazon. They really have everything. So we found the English version, the German version, but the Czech version was just nowhere to be found. And I'm good with Google. It just didn't exist. And this is probably where it got a bit personal to me, because I was just like desperate to find this magical book that apparently got translated somewhere in 1896, according to our resources, but we were just couldn't get our hands on it. So finally, I found a copy of a Czech translation again from 1896, somewhere in a museum. But, you know, it's so old, it's a historical object. You can't really, you have to schedule an appointment so that you could take a look at that book. Like, you almost can't touch it. You definitely cannot read it. So that's obstacle number one. Then we found that the Czech National Library provides a scanned version. But that's so inconvenient, because it's like, it's literal scans of like page by page of the whole book. So you have to like download the separate pages and then build like one PDF. And even if you like went through that whole process, which I did, and it wasn't fun, and you'd like miraculously found a copy, it was still written or translated over 110 years ago. And the Czech language has evolved since incredibly. So it is hard to read that language. So we eventually came to the conclusion that we need to get it retranslated in order to be able to give it to the Czech public. And now it was like I was full on in the project. Now that was my baby, and I was invested. And so in high school, one of my favorite electives was translation. So I knew there was a department at Charles University School where you can study translation. So I reached out and I found these two amazing professors with whom we've developed this amazing program. They basically found a group of students who study translation, German to Czech and Czech to German. And they built this group of students who would do the translation, and then the professors would do the final editing and the final touches. And this took about one semester. And it was an absolutely amazing cooperation with them. The students, they got credits for it. So they were doing it for a reason, but also later then they were saying that it was amazing because they were doing like schoolwork, but then it would actually get published, which was for the biggest majority of them the first time that happened. And the translation is just phenomenal and so professional, I must say. The feedback we're getting is just lovely. And then it was easy. PragVision, we found a publisher and we had it printed right in time for the conference. So it was a roller coaster, but then the translating itself, that was such a lovely cooperation with the Charles University that I cannot highlight that enough.
Had they heard of Bertha?
No, which is, and we're coming back to the issue that the Czech people, sadly, Bertha was born in Prague. We know the location of the original house that she was born in, but really, really few people know about her. And I was told that in a course on, I want to say, political philosophy or a similar course at the Charles University, they mentioned her, and they even have her in like the reading lists that no students ever read, but she's there, but they don't read them because they don't have the book.
Wow. So they have Diwaf and Nieder. They have Diwaf and Nieder on the reading list.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So that's what I've heard. Wow. Didn't study Charles University, but yeah.
Go ahead, Randy.
So, as I understand it, you you finish this translation and then you launch it at this. You put together a big international conference in order to sort of kick the book out into the world. I'm curious if there's anything about that conference that sort of stood out to you as like a. I don't know. Is there anything that stood out?
Again, so many things, but it was interesting because we first knew that we wanted to do the conference and then we figured out we needed to do the book. That we had the book and then we did the conference, but we did launch the book at the conference. So it was a 2-day international conference. It had to be held in Prague, but the first half of the first day was just in Czech, and we had a little launch, and there were some amazing people there. And then for the conference, we labeled it Bertha von Suttner, 130 years that don't get old. Oh no, 130 years of ideas that don't get old. And the whole conference was just highlighting Bertha's ideas and her legacy and how relevant these still are in the 21st century. And in many cases, even more relevant now than in 1890 something. And also just back to the idea that she was born here, but people don't know her, but then we go to Austria and they have her on the 2 euro coin and are claiming her theirs. So we needed to bring Bertha back to Prague.
We'll talk about the conference a little bit more, but I just want to go back to the translation project and connect it to the, again, you began to do it to this point about education and people in Prague don't know her and these professors don't know her. And my question is, you know, is that like, do you feel that ignorance about her on the part of these language professors was part of the draw to do this, and why there was, you know, such fierceness and urgency by these professors to do this thing with a class?
Well, I think this was twofold. Once after we introduced Bertha to them and the whole idea, they clearly very fastly understood that this is something that they wanted to do. But also just the idea of having a project for the students that would actually get published, unlike the rest of their workload that they translate and then it just lies somewhere on someone's table and no one ever reads it. So I think it was also partially for the experience of having, you know, a real physical, beautiful book that will be somewhere in a bookstore and people will be able to buy it. And you'll be able to say that you've contributed to that, I think was a big drive force for them.
So how did you describe Bertha to the professors? What was your sort of intro to her?
We in the Czech Republic, I like to go with the only woman, the only Czech woman to ever receive the Nobel Peace Prize. And if that doesn't work, which it usually does, we try to remember the people that, you know, she, because thanks to Bertha, there even is the Nobel Peace Prize. And going with the Alfred Nobel story. And then we talk about everything else and her pan-Europeanism and all that, and people fall in love with her fairly quickly.
I find that too, that the connection to the Nobel Peace Prize is it's a sort of catches people. Anybody else on the go ahead.
If I just may add, this was just like the specific experience with professors, very, very educated people. Then there is, you know, the reactions to Bertha, it really depends on where in the country you are or what specific group of people you talk to. Even like we're a really tiny country, but there is major differences among the population. And also, so there's four things that I'll be brief, I promise. She was born a countess. So to some people, you know, they're having a hard time imagining her living in poverty, though that was the sad reality. And also some people still, sadly, react badly to the idea of lay down your arms. And this past year in 2020, we were trying to raise funds to organize a second edition so that we could print another 500 something copies and publish an ebook and really to get the book out there. And some extremists on, you know, our social media or Facebook were commenting with actual life threats. And that's not a fun thing to be reading in the morning. So we were fighting that, and it was purely based just on the title of the book, Lay Down Your Arms. And it was just, but generally, also there's a thing that people, it's hard to convince people in the Czech Republic that Bertha is a Czech person. She was born there, and she was born into a family that's still very famous here, and they still own multiple castles and real estates. But Bertha didn't live here. She wrote in German mostly. So I guess a lot of Czechs still don't view her as a Czech figure, but that's something that we work on. And generally people's reaction to Bertha is overwhelmingly good. But there, just wanted to say that there are some stories that don't go as well too.
Yeah. Well, even in Bertha herself, as you know, had to face so much ridicule. The movement faced ridicule. And I'll just share a quote that she sort of witnesses when the Peace Palace opens up in 1913. And by the way, like even the 1899 Hague Peace Conference, people are sort of laughing at that. It's like, are you serious? This is going to go nowhere. People still make the same claims, but she says when they're basically throwing bottles as the Peace Palace is opening in 1913, quote, nothing new comes into the world without the sneering of fools. I love. So there's always, you know, people sort of like doubters and haters. And as you said in the beginning of the show, like that's one of her, you know, high points is her fortitude and her commitment in the face of this ridicule to continue with the vision. Anybody else? Question, comment, go ahead, Randy.
Yeah. I have a few comments. The first is with respect to the people who feel the need to criticize grand ideal, grand ideals. You know, it's like, I think the phrase is like a termite gnawing on a temple, something like that, where it's like, yes, well, you go on, you know, say what you have to say, but understand that, like, there's something truly magnificent underneath and behind the, I mean, many things, but the peace movement is a great example of this. And so then my second thing is, you know, it struck me that basically everything about Bertha's life is this, like, norm shifting situation where, like, in order to understand her as a human being, you have to break through a couple different frames. You have to acknowledge the fact that she was, like, royalty, but then not living with tremendous amount of wealth and luxury. We have to accept the fact that she's a woman who was deeply involved and influential in the political world before that was, like, I guess, realistic or normal for most women. Like, there's a number of things like that that, you know, in the process of discovering this human being and unpacking her story, it's like the frames of history and the frames of the world start to break down, and it's like forces a person to expand their mind. And I mean, I think that's why we talk about her so much. She's this fascinating human being. But I hadn't thought about the fact that she was, you know, also not particularly comfortably living during the, you know, the period where she's away writing with Arthur.
Yeah, and that's also, like, what then why we have the Nobel Peace Prize and why she even reached out to Nobel about this, as at least to my understanding, because she knew that peace activists and in this field the money is just not there, and that's how it all got together. So there is a silver lining everywhere. But also just about the ridicule, even like in the book Lay Down Your Arms, and I cannot pronounce it in German, and about the first third, there is a scene when where they're discussing Darwin and Darwinism, a theory that we today, by biggest majority, find as an obvious thing. But then back at their time, they're still laughing at it and not taking it seriously. And Bertha's ideas of peace and providing an alternative to an armed war, that's a similar story, because in her age and her time, no one could imagine a world without war. But now, also thanks to Bertha, we know this is possible. I mean, Europe used to be a continent that went on for centuries with just a war going on somewhere on the continent. And now, like, can you imagine the Czech Republic declaring an armed war to Germany or something? Hmm. So I think it's just believing in the big ideas and mobilizing the people. And yeah, it's just fascinating to me.
Cool. Anybody else?
Yeah, Vonda, would you say that through your efforts, I guess one thing I'm really curious about is what kind of reaction do you receive, you know, outside of the people who very abhorrently give you death threats and stuff, the people who, you know, have really never heard of Bertha before and then they come to know her, what is their reaction to that? Do they feel the same sense of awe? Are they inspired by her? Are they shocked that this is a history they've never known up until that point?
I think first definitely comes the stage of shock. Then of course nationalism kicks in, so we're proud of Bertha. And then the biggest majority of people that I've introduced to Bertha had the desire to read the book then and went on and read some Wikipedia pages, and then they're coming back to me and they want to talk about her more. which is amazing. And that's the living proof that her ideas are still so relevant, and her legacy is still here living and breathing with us. And that's also what's so inspiring to me, just to be, you know, broadcasting these ideas as much as I can. And it's amazing. And sometimes we were doing quite a lot of publicity for the while we're trying to raise the funds for the new edition, and we had, you know, newspapers contributors just randomly finding us on Instagram and asking for some comments. And the reaction to that when they found out about this person who they had no idea about, and also the name, because she really was born into a very famous family in the Czech Republic, or wasn't the Czech Republic back then, but that she was born into the Kinsky family, which still resonates. So it feels, when you discover that, you have a feeling like, how have I passed my history classes without knowing about Bertha? And we went to, there is a castle that they own, and we went there with PragVision for a team working field trip. And sadly, actually, they have, you know, when you do a castle tour, there's like the blue room for the guys and then the pink room for the ladies and so on, all very fancy. And then they have a portrait of her, which we knew of. That's why we picked the castle to go to. And it's not Bertha in the portrait. And we pointed it out. And the tour guide acknowledged it, but apparently this person who takes care of that castle, like, is convinced that that's Bertha and they're not taking it down. But interesting, and they actually talked about how the family is Bertha, you know, because her mother had a gambling problem even back then, so they lost their money quite quickly. So the family wasn't really fond of Bertha. So they were even saying that within the tour that the family was trying to get rid of her. And that now, of course, they're regretting that. But it was there, and it's really interesting.
This is not Harmansdorf, is it?
Mm-mm, this is Karlova Koruna. Wow. It's, like an hour east to Prague. It's quite accessible.
Wow. Anybody else?
Well, I'd like to do a bit of a transition here. It's going to include a plug. So one of the things that we've talked about throughout the show today is how Bertha's ideas are still so relevant to us today. And one of the ones that I want to stress was the set of arguments that she lays out in Barbarization of the Sky, which was made available in the English language in 2016, courtesy of Hope. And, you know, it's foreshadowing the dangers associated with aerial combat and bombardment. And one of the things that's still absolutely relevant is the nuclear issue, which obviously began through aircraft, and I understand now it's, you know, it doesn't require a plane to fly around in order to drop a nuclear weapon, but nonetheless, there's a deep impression in all of our minds about the relationship between aircraft and bombings and then the nuclear issue. And so, Vonda, as I understand it, you're deeply involved in the world of nuclear disarmament. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about that, I guess. I know you mentioned it at the beginning, but.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for pointing this connection out, because I like to say that everything is so interconnected, many times I'm right, but no. So two main connections for me that at least I like to look at. One is that, well, first of all, Bertha called the Great War. She was calling states out on their arming and building these big militaries. and also the big increase in nationalism going on in Europe back then. So she saw it all coming, and she knew that, you know, raising big militaries would eventually lead to a big, great conflict. And so transition now to, we now have nuclear weapons and their proliferation. And as long as we have them, there is a chance of a conflict happening, and the chance is increasing. But also, not only that she was pointing this out, she also was providing an alternative to war. So, and that's the thing that you talked in the last episode, the mediation and conciliation and arbitration. So in just in general, legal processes in general, as a legitimate way of solving a conflict. And that's just brilliant. And this is exactly what we're trying to achieve today with all of our courts, with the UN. This is why all the nuclear weapons treaties are so important. So that's one thing. And then the second is that Berta was also, and I find this one particularly interesting, she was pointing out the inhumanity of war and also of the expanding bullets or the dum-dum bullets. So basically weapons that are affecting humans even after a conflict is over. And this is exactly what nuclear weapons are. I mean, decades after Soviet testing was concluded in Kazakhstan, there are still people today who are being born with a disability. People who did not fight in a war, people who had absolutely nothing to do with it. But there are people who are being born without a limb, with a strong disability. It's just, that to me is just crazy to even think about. And we do talk to these people, and their stories are just, it's just painful, truly, truly painful. So the inhumanity of war, using these weapons, that's also mentioned in the Hague Conventions. And the same argument was then also used in the 1996 ICJ case on the legality and the threats or use of nuclear weapons. So whereas nuclear weapons were clearly unimaginable to Berta and her peers back then, we really are employing the same principles and very similar logic to our arguments. And we're building actually on the arguments that were used and that they figured out in 1899 already. Some of us still can, yeah, understand them in 2021. But yeah, no, so that's the two big connections. Of course, there is more, and they, of course, go much more into depth, but I'm just for the clear understanding of how I'm trying to look at it, I think. Yeah, just inhumanity of war and, of course, of those weapons, and then the alternative solution to an armed conflict, both extremely, extremely relevant today as well.
Yeah, I want to just follow up on that. And I, Randy, I'll move it to you in a second. So I apologize. But, you know, this core argument that you're referring to, not only the, like, the inhumanity of the weapons, but the fact that persons, you know, non-combatants are affected by the war and so forth. And we have talked about this really in the shows that we did on the Korean War. And we made some points about collateral damage, and you know, that's still, it's still quote unquote legal. It's a legal part of warfare, as long as the deaths and the suffering is proportional, then it's legal. And I just want to connect that to something else that Berta pointed out in 1899 at that first peace conference. I think I mentioned it last week, but the conference, you know, was called to accomplish several goals. One of them was disarmament. One of them was making more normalizing arbitration as a way of solving disputes. And the third one was updating the Geneva Conventions. And in her Hague Diary of 1899, which has not yet been published in English, but will be, she says that, look, I'm not even going to comment on that aspect of the conference. And it's kind of like a contradiction that you would, on the one hand, call a conference to replace war with like this new court, the Permanent Court of Arbitration. So why are you then like updating the laws of war? And she says something like, it's like if you were eradicating slavery on the one hand, and then at the same conference, you are trying to determine the number of lashes that slaves could get. They're totally inconsistent. And I'm not going to comment on that part of the conference, she says. And I just think that that's so, like, we've talked about this on the show before, but I just want to point out that, yeah, it like today, collateral damage is totally like, quote unquote, legal pursuant to the Geneva Conventions. And that I find that disturbing. And this is an older body of law. And Bertha had a very well-known dispute with Henry Dunant about like the sort of like the tactics that you use. I just wanted to make that point. And Vonda, I'll see if you have any comment, and then I'll go back to Randy.
You're absolutely right. And just with the legality, that brings me to the TPNW. But maybe we can talk about that a bit later. Mm-hmm. But also just that, what's legal and what isn't legal, and where something is legal. Mm-hmm. Not a legal expert on this at all, but it's a super interesting discussion that we could have.
Yeah, maybe we can talk about that next week. That would be a great place to start. But Randy, did you have something?
Yeah, I there's a number of examples that are comparable to the one I'm going to provide, but you know, frankly, the nuclear issue, it doesn't really even strike me as a legal issue, right? The initial testing of the thermonuclear warheads was something that, like, there was a legitimate question as to whether it would even, like, whether the chain reaction of fission and fusion that creates that enormous explosion that we now think of as a hydrogen bomb, like, they weren't sure if it was going to stop. It's like, hi, we're going to potentially blow up the whole Earth. Now, that doesn't strike me as a legal issue. Like, of course, there's a legal component to it, but it's like, at some point, we have to start to acknowledge that, like there's something suicidal going on, and like, I don't know, it's more than a legal issue, and that's all.
That's a brilliant comment. I also think that, you know, because it's thankfully only happened twice that nuclear weapons were used, I think many people, and especially my generation, were having a hard time even imagining it actually happen. Because I grew up in Central Europe with nuclear weapons pretty much being all around me, but they were there, they never really did anything, so I wasn't forced to paying any attention to them. And that's probably why it's also missing in our education, because they're just there, and we're sort of got used to them, which is so wrong. But there's many projects now that are trying to focus on the possibility of them being used again, whether by accident or in an actual conflict. And that's so great. And the people, so for example, the Hair Trigger game that was developed by NTI, and it's a phone game. You can download it on your smartphone. And in the game, you're the president of the United States. You have your own, graphically, the city of New York, and you're negotiating with the Russian president on how you're lowering the number of your warheads, and you're trying to figure out how to get them down and within how many years. And then if you're not careful, your New York City is going to get blown up. And that's just great. And then there is just other simulations. But I think that it shouldn't be a legal issue. It should be a moral one, but it cannot be more issue when there's so many people who are just not aware of this being an issue in the first place. Like, there's so many people that just don't know about them, we're doing, we have, and we can talk about this next week too, but in Germany, in the Netherlands, and in Belgium, there is American nuclear weapons on their soil, and people just have no idea they're there. Mm. And that to me is just wrong.
Yeah, and I, going back to this remark, like suicide is not a legal issue. Fascinatingly, in the in Bertha's Hague diary, she repeatedly, and this is again like way before nuclear weapons, this is 1899, she's repeatedly referring to war as assisted suicide. That, like, it's just given the technology now, there's no such thing as a winner. It is assisted suicide. And I found that amazing. So we've been going for about an hour. We're going to wind things down, especially since we're sort of like laying the groundwork for our discussion next week. But I do want to go back to the conference and do mention that on our show resources page, virtuesofpeace.com, you can link to pictures of the conference and more importantly to like the actual videos and talks. And I was wondering, Vonda, if you if you want to highlight anything in particular, because it's a lot of footage. You said it's 2 days. Are there archives in English and in Czech or just Czech? Can you just talk about the archives of the conference?
Right. So the archives are in the English language. So we have a report that's only in English. It was an international conference. Mm-hmm. For the participants, we were having all we had a simultaneous translation on, and that went within English, Czech, and also German, because we had a lot of German participants. So that really everyone would understand and could get involved. But then the archives and the whole report, that's in English only, because we're an NGO. We just simply didn't have the workforce to have it translated and then do have the videos there. But so that's in English. If I can talk about the conference for a bit.
Please.
The vision really was, again, to highlight Bertha's legacy. And there we struggled a bit because there's so many different ways of how to look at this. Mm. So we're trying to figure out how to fit Bertha's life and all of the ideas within just 2 days, which is a really short time. Mm-hmm. So, but I think we've done a pretty good job in terms of covering all the different areas. So we did cover her legacy as in her person. So we had guests from, you know, from The Hague, and we also talked about supporting civil society action through international peace prizes, which is going back to Bertha inspiring Alfred Nobel to establish the Peace Prize. So we had a former member of the Norwegian Nobel Committee on. We also had a Right Livelihood laureate speaking, which is, for those who don't know, it's called the Alternative Nobel Peace Prize, basically. We also focused on the Czech Republic, of course, and we talked about the Global Peace Index, which is a super interesting research, because the Czech Republic, we recently made it to one of the top 10 most peaceful countries. So we talked about what that means and how that can be misrepresented and so on. Of course, the alternatives to using force, but also what I really wanted to have in the conference was the fact that Bertha really was pan-European. You know, she was born in Prague, she lived in Brno and other cities in the Czech Republic, then she went on and lived in Austria and France for a bit, and then Germany and Georgia and so many countries, and spoke multiple languages. She really was like a European citizen before it was cool. And I think she'd be a big fan of the European Union today as a peace project. So that was covered in the conference as well. And that's something that I really would like to highlight in my future work as well. But I also wanted to make sure that we had representatives, not only from, you know, civil society, but also academia and then politicians and then the private sector and so on. So that we really managed to have like a meaningful debate with many points of view and then new ideas coming to the table. And I think that probably for me was just the highlight of so many different people coming from so many different backgrounds, but all acknowledging Bertha von Suttner's legacy and the ideas and how we should pay more attention to them. And yeah, just the general vibe. And then we also did a movie screening of the Love for Peace movie. Mm-hmm. It's a German biographic movie about the life of Bertha and her encounter with Alfred Nobel. It's basically a love story. It portraits Bertha very well to those who have never heard of the name before. It's got a beautiful soundtrack. It's got romance in it. It's got everything. So we had a movie screening for anyone who signed up, and we had an informal discussion afterwards. So it had also the very informal vibe to it as well, and that I enjoyed very much. Mm. It was a good time. And the videos of the panels are online. We didn't manage to film the discussions and the roundtables just because also we really wanted that to be the informal part of the conference, and so that people could speak freely and have that. But the panels are up online, and I think they're very much worth watching even year after the conference.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can access those panels at our show resources page, virtuesofpeace.com. And we are coming to the end of the show, but Vonda will be back next week and we will talk more about nuclear disarmament. And so just last question, and then I'll open it up for closing remarks from the other hosts. So you did a conference, you're working on the second edition. Do you have other, like some new projects in the works for Bertha's memory?
We do. So I really want to go to the Geneva archives and see what I can find there. We have this woman here who's like an expert on Bertha's lives. And when she was younger, she had a scholarship to go to the Geneva archives, and she found like actual gold there. And apparently there's copies of letters between Bertha and Masaryk, or the first Czechoslovakian president, who apparently she saw as someone who would continue her work and follow her work in a way. Then I think that this is something that the Czech public would be very interested in seeing, and a way of, you know, using Masaryk as a figure that everyone knows and everyone loves to use and bring Bertha a bit closer to home. That's a project that I would love to make happen. Also, we were playing with the idea of Bertha's statue, just for the simple reason, like when you walk around Prague or generally any historical city, how many statues can you find of different generals and soldiers or anyone war related? And then how many of those who worked towards peace? And for a whole another debate, how many women? But that'd be a big project.
Amazing.
But, generally also use, yeah, no. And finally also use Bertha for peace education. And that's something that we've already discussed. And the EU and the UN. And I really think sometimes these institutions are in the Czech Republic viewed, we use this narrative as like them in the EU or them at the UN. But and we don't realize that it's actually us at the EU and us in the UN or the OSCE or any other institution, because it's being neglected in schools, and we don't understand how the EU Parliament works. And of course, why would we go and elect anyone? So really use Bertha and her thinking in peace education, not just in the Czech Republic, but really around the globe, because that's something that I see as fundamentally just missing. Mm.
Sounds great. And so the archives you're referring to are the Suttner Freed papers that are held by the UN archives in Geneva. Mm-hmm. And so you can access some of those archives online. And if you go to the Bertha von Suttner project, berthavonsuttner.com, and you click on the research link and you scroll down to the bottom of the page, left-hand column, you can click on the archives there, or you can, of course, Google it. But yeah, they have an amazing collection there. And so that will be actually discussed in some future shows. But let me open it up to first, Michael, any closing remarks?
Yeah, I would just like to say thank you so much, Vonda, for coming on. Your moral energy, as we describe it here, has truly shown through in everything that you've done and the work that you have done to educate others on this truly profound and still relevant history. And the amazing person, Bertha von Suttner, is truly inspirational. So I've been truly moved. Thank you so much.
I'm blushing. Thank you.
Randy?
I'll close with my favorite quote from Bertha and a explanation for it. So Bertha, she says, "Doubts arose in me, but I chased those doubts away." And there's deep wisdom in that statement. I'm a student of Joseph Campbell and Carl Jung and those kinds of thinkers. And there's this idea that you have to enter the forest at the darkest point where there is no path. And that's synonymous with the idea of fear, right? It's like a symbolic representation of fear and the things that are afraid or things that generate terror. And, you know, Bertha's literally bringing that same idea into a sentence with the active verb and bringing it into the, you know, present tense. And it's so amazing to think about this idea that, you know, one sentence can really provide a foundational pillar for how to live life. If you want to grow optimally, and it's packaged into archetypal wisdom, and it's in active language. So yeah, it's been one of the most important sentences that I've ever heard, and so I wanted to just stress that now as we're talking about her so much today. And doubts arose in me, and I chased those doubts away, but I chased those doubts away.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. Yeah, I love that quote too. And I will end, and then I'll just, Vonda, you'll have the last word, but I just want to mark the moment where we are and what happened in the United States. Was it yesterday with the storming of the Capitol? Yeah. And I think it was Rudy Giuliani who gave a speech at this rally and who used a phrase, trial by combat. And that, like, we need to resolve, you know, the fraud with trial by combat. And I just want to link that to an earlier peace activist from the United States, former Senator Charles Sumner, who in 1845 gave a speech on July 4th in Boston called The True Grandeur of Nations. I highly recommend reading this speech. You can download it for free. It's a commitment of, I would say, a good 10, 12 hours if you're reading the footnotes. But he mentions trial by combat in that 1845 speech. And this is a great American. And this goes back to the point about education and the moral imagination here, and that it really alarmed me to hear this phrase being used, whatever, yesterday, because in 1845, Charles Sumner says, we've evolved from that. We're like, and war is trial by combat, and that we've sort of grown out of this way of doing things, and war is not a just way to solve any problem. And of course, Bertha von Suttner picks up on that idea. And this is the red thread that she talks about. And so I just wanted to mark that moment and connect it to this history that we try to uncover. And even in the United States, trial by combat was marked and then, you know, recognized as being an illegitimate process in 1845 on the 4th of July. So I just want to point to that part of American history that may be overshadowed by what happened yesterday. So Vonda, last word, and you'll be back next week, God willing, and we'll talk more about the nuclear issue, but the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you. So final sentences, just the idea to promote and work towards something that you really believe in, even if at times people laugh at you, that's really something that I personally see as one of Bertha's biggest contributions and where I try to get inspired by her in both my personal and professional life. So with that, I'd like to thank you for doing this podcast and for contributing to reviving Bertha's legacy and her thoughts and ideas. So important. So thankful that I could spend my Thursday evening with you. And I can't wait to continue this discussion next week. Yes. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Yeah. Thank you, Vonda, for all that you have done and will do in educating us, our hearts and our minds. You have been listening to Virtues of Peace. And we will be back next week. And thank you, and have a great evening or afternoon. Bye-bye.